This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here. Yes, sir. Number two. General at your service live in Sunnyvale, Texas. Jeff Cavanaugh across the way in Lake Highlands and Studio Day Heffrey. Brian Broaddus and Lucius Alexander, 75 in Fitzhugh. And we have Carter Freeman coordinating the video for us at 105thefan.com/fancam. All right, what do we have in hour number two? Fish is coming up in 20 minutes. Tell us everything we need to know about the Cowboys and the contracts and everything that are coming together. Here in just a couple of minutes, I'll give you 10 things to know about a Cowboy, Don Terry Poe. And there was a lot of interesting stuff about Don Terry, a little background on him. But the U.S.
related to Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. Surgeon General has named emerging hotspots for coronavirus. And what you're looking at here is New Orleans, Chicago, the Windy City. It's blown in. Detroit, Rock City. L.A. is now a hot spot. Miami's a hot spot. Indianapolis is a hot spot. Y'all must focus on flattening the curve, okay? The curve is spiking pretty good in those municipalities. I don't know if it's going to get as bad as New York. Hopefully not. I mean, some of the stories that are coming out of New York, some of the videos of the different medical professionals preparing to go into battle there with, you know, some people have state-of-the-art stuff and some people are going pretty flimsy in there with, you know, like a nightgown and a pair of Speedo goggles or something. But yeah, those are the spots that are looking bad. I saw there was one old folks home in New Orleans have 50 cases already, including the great former Saints kicker Tom Dempsey. Of course, you remember Tom Dempsey, guy
sure
that had
do.
Half a foot,
yeah,
punched it 63 yards. Yeah, he's got corona down there in New Orleans. So that's the closest it is, though. New Orleans is the closest it is, and then Indianapolis. But I just mentioned New York. First responders are now taking to sleeping in cars in New York City because they don't want to take the coronavirus home. They figure, okay, I got to do this job. I'm in here on the front lines fighting, but I don't want to take it home and spread it around the house and give it to my wife and kids or husband and kids and all that. So New York has been the center of the pandemic in the U.S. with 60,000 cases and 1,000 deaths so far, pushing the state's health system to the brink.
General, have you seen, though, the numbers in Seattle, which was the initial hot spot in the country, have gone down?
Okay.
So new cases and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's a little hope on the horizon that maybe some of the stuff that they're doing in Seattle is working. So New Orleans, again, I have a great background in this, in the state of Louisiana, and, you know, Mardi Gras didn't help situation down there, you know, with what was going on. So that, you know, if they could have avoided that, and it was so weird last night. I was seeing pictures from Bourbon Street with nobody on the street, actually on the street there. And it was, that's chilling to see that, but they say because of things that were going on with Mardi Gras and stuff that might have lost the handle of it during that situation.
So at least the folks down there in New Orleans, the king of partying, they know it's time to get off the streets.
Yeah.
Heck, I saw a discussion here in Dallas. They're thinking about closing the parks because people still keep getting together.
Hey, we're 6 feet away from each other. I've been to the parks like damn near every day last week. It was beautiful. But we're 6 feet away from each other. We're not like going around like, you know, sharing water fountains and stuff.
Yeah. So when
we're
you
not
were
playing
at the
basketball.
Parks, you didn't notice any irresponsible gathering at the parks?
You know, I may have seen like maybe three or four people together, but the thing is 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should change that rule. If that rule is not good enough, because, you know, people are going to fudge it by about 25% or so. So if, you know, 6 feet and 10 people is too much, then just say, you know, 20 feet and two people. You know, you can just stand on the other side of the court and talk to each other if you want.
I wonder, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, what's it going to take for people to realize, is somebody famous going to have to die? Is somebody that they connect with that say, wow, that guy or gal got it, and all of a sudden, or just people just going to be irresponsible?
Well, you know, because of social media, something can be 100% false, but people can manufacture their own bubble and just live in it, you know? Yeah. And there are some, you know, legitimate or somewhat legitimate news outlets that are echoing similar things to those people. So if they check their social media and their one or two channels and that's what reality is, and anything that says different, they think that's not real or they're just not going there, then there's nothing that could happen to change their minds until their thought leaders tell them something different. They're not going to take independent thoughts from the world and connect them and make their own conclusions. They've already had it summarized for them, and they're going with that.
I just don't know what's going to have to happen to get people's attention about this. You know, that's the thing that's the most disappointing, is that they're, you know, experts are telling you, hey, you need to follow these guidelines, and you still don't follow these guidelines. You know, is this stupidity, stubbornness? What is this?
That's a good question.
And I wish I had a great answer for to say, you know, what keeps you from like paying attention?
Arrogance.
You might be. You're
right. This isn't the only topic that they close their ears on.
Yeah, I find it just, you know, if you're going to put yourself in harm's way and you're putting other people, I don't know what to think of you. I really, really don't. I mean, if you're going to continue to lead like a reckless lifestyle when people around you are dying, and you could be responsible for deaths, I have little or no time for you.
Well, yeah, and you know, they might be the reason that we have to go to those more strict guidelines. You know, maybe the more strict guidelines are coming here in the next week or so. I saw the president today say it's going to be like a federal quarantine type of situation for the rest of the month. So and maybe for 2 months, actually. So it'll get really interesting. And I just don't know if they're going to elevate what the standard is. And if they do elevate the standard, I think that would go a long way. But I think they want to see, like Governor Greg Abbott was saying last weekend, I think they want to know, what will this level of social distancing buy us? And I think you have to let at least 2 or 3 weeks play out with some idiots doing their thing. If we can have some idiots and the majority of the people adhering to it, are we going to flatten the crap out of this curve so we don't have to worry about them? Or is that going to be enough to keep the virus going to a point that we have to elevate it? China felt like, you know, we got to make sure nobody's on the dang street unless you're specifically going to an essential service.
And you're also seeing cases that are parts of China that are actually approving, even though this was where it started. Yeah. Some of the measures that they've taken to put their thumb on the situation has proved beneficial.
So do you think now that they've flattened it, can they get back to work without it jumping back up and creating a new epicenter or whatever?
Well, they're going to have some cases that are going to linger, is what they've said. And so, but you know, they're making the measures to try and take care of those cases. But I you know, to me, it was such a bad situation there, that the way the numbers were going, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, we're going to have to do something and do it now. And they did.
Yeah, they went
straight. And it worked. And that's, I'm just looking for solutions here to try and get this thing, like you said, General, flattened out.
Okay, the search for solutions is a great topic. There's a couple of things that might be regulatory that are preventing, like, some really important things from happening. I was reading about where the HIPAA laws are making it hard, like in the middle of a pandemic, for multiple agencies to share information about individual cases. And it's making it very difficult to aggregate the info and start making educated decisions, because everybody is essentially making conclusions in America about corona based on what's happening in their individual environment. They can't aggregate reliable information well enough yet. And that's just weird that we can't say. And then there's another one with medical sales. I got a buddy in medical sales, and he's like, yeah, it's hard to get permission to sell the N95 masks. That's why Stephon Marbury had to take it upon himself to buy 10 million and give it to somebody. Because you can't just be like, oh, I need medical masks, I'm going to Google it and buy them. You got to have the certain kind of exemption or license, and it's like, well, you're buying medical supplies and you haven't been to the proper schools or training to get it done. And because of those, there's a lot of, you know, people that are in need. There's supplies sitting elsewhere, but everybody's trying to troubleshoot this on the fly, and the people that could actually access it for whatever reason aren't able to.
Well, the whole big story over the weekend was about making ventilators, and that the government in 2016 had commissioned a company to make inexpensive ventilators, and then another company came along and bought the company so they wouldn't make cheaper ventilators, is what happens. And so now that the government had been paying this one company in California to make these ventilators, and they had to completely stop because another company bought them and said, okay, you're over here now, and then we know nothing about this contract that you had with the government. So then the government came back and said, okay, we'll buy the ventilators through you. And they never followed through on the ventilators.
Government contracts, that's always
That's fun. What I'm saying. So, here you had somebody being proactive to try and make inexpensive ventilators, and another company comes along and says, whoa, you're taking our market share away. We're just going to buy you out, and then that way make you go away. And then act like that we never had a contract here.
Yeah.
So that's the problem that these companies are dealing with here, that they're trying to do things in the right way, but all of a sudden there's red tape or another company comes along and makes it very, very difficult.
Gotta love that free market. Free market capitalism at its finest.
Yes, people are dying.
I'm a paid elected official to pass a law that makes sure nobody can compete with me. All right. One of my favorites here, Don Terry Poe's top 10 things you need to know about him. I love how the morning news does this most of the time. You get a new player in town. My favorite thing is he had not played football up until high school. Don Terry Poe, mountain of a man, arrives in high school, had never played, and he was marching in the band. They were practicing while the football team was doing, August training camp or whatever, and the coach was like, what the hell? Look at the size of that kid. Bring him over here. And he explained to him, son, you might be pretty good at football based on my trained eye and the way that you're built. Holy cow. I think each one of your legs weighs about 125 pounds.
Put that trumpet down.
Yeah. Son, do you want to be doing that, or would you rather be playing a sport? Let me get the backstory here. So he graduated high school at 315 pounds, and the high school coach had a big old smile on his face. Although he was only a two-star prospect going to Memphis. Probably because he didn't have the ideal measurements. I mean, he's kind of really stout, isn't he?
He's very stout, yeah.
He's got a different kind of football body.
Yeah,
he's impressively strong one.
Yeah. 346 at the combine, I believe.
You know what, the schools like Memphis, TCU back in the day when we were in the Mountain West and stuff, really those coaches did a great job of evaluating talent. Ron Leary went to Memphis too. Sometimes it's that one or two star guy that nobody else wants that goes to Memphis and then thrives. Those teams in the American Conference, American football field, with the SMUs and those people, the Central Floridas and stuff, those coaches do a great job of evaluating those kids, because a lot of those kids don't end up, the big program should recruit them, and they don't. They end up at those schools and do great things.
Okay, you might have heard Don Terry Poe elsewhere in the 10 things you might not know about him. He is the heaviest player in league history to rush for a touchdown. He passed a refrigerator Perry's mark. He's also thrown for a touchdown pass and caught a touchdown pass. He's about 11 pounds heavier than Fridge was. I love when the big guys
get... a little jet sweep action with Don Terry Poe. Get him out there as a wing back. Send him in motion. Get him the rock on the move.
We talked about that lateral slide, didn't we? Maybe. I don't know about that. But straight ahead stuff is really, really good, as we all know.
Are you sure they needed Olawale with a weapon like this potentially in your backfield?
I tell you, Olawale, what was up with that?
He might catch better.
Yeah, exactly.
He did miss the final five games of Carolina season last year when they sputtered to an 0-5 finish, so that's good to know. I didn't know he was hurt like that last year. It kind of stings when people say, well, your two tackles, McCoy and Poe right there, they comboed up to have like the worst run defense in the NFL last year for Carolina.
Yeah.
You kind of got to own a little bit of that, don't you? But
you do.
We also had injuries that were a factor.
Luke Kuechly wasn't as good as he normally was either, too. That's all really a byproduct, in my opinion, of having a rookie quarterback that put them in a lot of three and out situations, played a lot more snaps than they should have.
I like it. And then he is from Kansas City, as Don Terry Poe. Must have bummed him out when he started his career with the Chiefs before moving on to Atlanta, then Carolina.
He's going to upgrade his barbecue here.
Yes, he is. But
KC
he doesn't
barbecue's
eat barbecue
good.
Anymore.
Oh, he didn't?
No, he lost 15 pounds by cutting out barbecue alone after his first year in the league.
That's
coaches
a
were
bad
like,
idea.
Bro,
yeah.
You got potential and you carry weight well, but if you had less, it would be really good for you. So he dropped 15 pounds eating eggs and grilled fish and chicken, and that kind of unlocked his career. A lot
well,
of
that takes him off my favorite fat athlete list. If you give up barbecue, you move down a couple
you gotta
spots.
Like some burnt ends, don't you, Jeffrey?
Something. Something, some ribs.
Yeah, a lot of good things you can do. And I tell you what, as a guy now who is, what am I looking at here? I got 13 days to go until Easter. That means I've done 35 days of Lent. That's 5 weeks worth of no barbecue for me. Whew. And I'll tell you what, I'm fiending, man. I'm sitting over here itching on the weekends. Yesterday, I just started a fire just to watch the bluish, light white
yeah.
smoke.
See, make sure you can make the smoke. Yeah, make the smoke yeah. run clean.
Yeah.
I was looking at my crawfish pot the other day. I go, can I do a crawfish boil for one? That's what I was thinking, like, just so I could do it. I just wanted to cook crawfish for myself.
Well, you could deliver some if you needed to get rid of some
extra.
I'll
be happy to deliver some to you, Jeffrey. You know that.
Speaking of food and tremendous athletes who could lose a couple of LBs, Paul Pierce.
Hmm. Oh, I thought you were going to say Mike Fisher's next.
No, that would have been good. But no, NBA Hall of Famer Paul Pierce says he's thinking about playing in the Big Brother-style Big Three tournament. And, hey, I was a big Paul Pierce fan when he was with the Celtics and all that, Kansas. I was like, man, this guy's a baller. He was maybe the second or third best two guard of his generation, Kobe, D-Wade in there. But he has turned into a mountain of a man.
Yeah.
You know, when I see Paul Pierce on set now, I just I'm like, wow. It just screams like too many carbs and red meat, his diet.
Yeah,
I don't
Wait,
know.
Gavin, he used to have to exercise a lot, and now if you had enough money to never have to again, and you used to be an elite athlete, I'd get to 400.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe he's going to play that Oliver Miller style in the middle.
Yeah.
Just post me up, going Zach Randolph down here.
That would be so great to watch Paul Pierce play old man post-up ball.
Yes, it would indeed. Reminiscent of a Magic Johnson who made his return to the Lakers in 96 to play power forward. Okay, when we come back, G-Bag Nation, it's time for Mike Fisher to join us. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. Double Insider has the Cowboys and Mavs covered, and he'll give you the very latest next in the nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for Mike Fisher to join us. Get the very latest here on the Cowboys and Mavs. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call Frankel and Frankel at 214-333-3333 or go online to truckwreck.com. Frankel and Frankel, Principal Office, Dallas, Texas. And here he is, Mike Fisher, on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Fan. Afternoon, Fish. How the heck are you?
Afternoon, boys. Yeah, that Zoom and businesses like that that know what they're doing, they're about ready. Zoom's about ready to boom.
Yeah.
Because of where all of us are, but especially in the NFL, where they're using those sorts of formats to interview players, to check in with each other, to have their meetings. Obviously, there's some essential personnel that are still inside the star, but most of the folks are working from home. And we're going to see the same effect, I'm quite sure, when we get to the NFL draft. They are still trying to work out the formatics. How technologically, how are we going to do this? Obviously, we're not going to Las Vegas anymore. That's very clear. And, in fact, neither is anybody else. That's a ghost town. We are going to have the draft. We're going to still have drama. Because, and I'm sure they've thought of this, but if they haven't, here you go. Just put the camera in the kid's house. Just put it there and let it go.
Yeah.
And watch it go. The kid and his dad and his mom and his aunt and his coach and they're talk about drama because they'll have been quarantined themselves. They'll be going nuts in their own house. Besides the usual go nuts that we get in the draft. Okay. And then there's this, Gavin. And you could find this story on social media at Fish Sports. What's going to happen to Jerry's crowded, palsy-wowsy war room on draft weekend?
It's going to be a lot more empty.
Yeah. So, first of all, because usually, and Brian, you could speak to this, certainly at Valley Ranch, the scouts were all over on this wall, the coaches on this wall, the executives kind of in the middle of the horseshoe. And then the cameras, of course, we all had to wear our ties and comb our hair because the cameras were everywhere, too. So how many people, Brian, were in the room at Valley Ranch at a given time?
Well, there was head coach, myself, pro guys. There was probably at one time only eight guys.
Okay, but when it comes to the Cowboys, there's you eight guys.
No, that was it. I mean, when we did the draft, that we kept the door closed. I mean, there were, you know, you've seen more access to the war room at the Star than you did at Valley Ranch.
Yes, but over the years, and maybe some of this is more recent, I've also seen Charlotte Jones in there.
Yes.
I've also seen Charlotte's son in there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The Star is more, they have a bigger, it's a bigger space than
right,
it was what we had at Valley Ranch. I have a feeling, Fish, that we're going to see only two people in a war room setting for every NFL team.
Because you can't have eight.
No.
And are you going to sit 6 feet apart from each other?
Well, like you say,
just Jerry and Bennett.
I have a feeling you're going to see somebody like Chris Hall and Will McClay in the actual war room talking to New York, and then everybody else will be funneled in. That's how I think it's going to work.
You know, Jerry and Steven can be together in another office.
Exactly. Exactly.
I assume that they're probably okay with the 6 feet thing. But all the scouts, they haven't been together.
They've been meeting. Been meeting over the WebEx and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. So we don't need them together. So yeah, that's going to be a boring looking war room compared to the way it usually is. And then Jeffrey, it's funny that you mentioned Bennett. He's in my story. Of course, the great Bennett Glazier, who's listening right now, executive vice president of Southern Glazier, the largest distributor of spirits in North America. My old friend Pat Obenshain, who used to be the proprietor of a longtime Las Plenas restaurant, 30 years there, a place where Jerry and the boys would go over and get themselves one of those Johnny Walker Blues once in a while. And Pat tells the story one night. Jerry had a very important phone call to make with New York, and there just wasn't any room in the restaurant. So Pat took a table, a telephone, and a glass of wine and put it in the middle of the dance floor. And Jerry sat down in the middle of the dance floor, enjoying himself thoroughly and calling New York with his big meeting. So, yeah, no Pat Obenshain there this year. Bennett Glazier, and we love Bennett, and it's kind of fun to watch him poke his head in the back over the years. He told me that in the Michael Gallup draft, because, of course, as we remember, not only was Governor Abbott in the room that day, and Governor Abbott actually was the guy that got on the phone and told Michael Gallup, you're a Cowboy, but Bennett Glazier was in there too, so obviously best friends with the Joneses. So Bennett was telling me, and it's in this story, the Michael Gallup draft, he got there early in the day, you know, too early for the usual fireworks. So they said, Fish, they let me into the room with the coordinators and Will McClay and Steven and Jerry, and they gave me the scouting report on Michael Gallup, and we all went over it. And he said, by gosh, by the end of it, I almost felt like I picked Michael Gallup, like I knew what I was talking about. So, and of course, as we all know, Jeffrey Kavanaugh actually picked Michael Gallup.
Sure did.
But that's another story.
Tried hard.
So that's a lot of fun. And of course, also over the years, the people that win the Texas lottery get to go in there.
Yeah.
And sometimes take pictures of the big board. So there's going to be a shutdown of Jerry's usual party in the war room, and that's going to be a big change. And I think, by the way, it might work out just fine. It might be kind of helpful.
Mike, if I can ask you a question about the contracts.
Yes. Up.
I'm sorry. Story time was – I've lived all your story time. So
all right.
Wow.
I'm just –
Okay, you know what? If you're going to be bitter about it, let me tell you something about Brian Broaddus. I've lived all your FaceTimes because you keep butt-dialing me FaceTime all weekend long, and I see you. You don't know that I see you. I see you carrying like a bag of seed out to the garden. Then I see you over here, and I hear you carrying a big jug of barbecue meat. Brian, get your kid to teach how to use FaceTime. It's time.
You need to wear a shirt then when I get you on FaceTime. I don't know what the hell was going on at your household when I got you on FaceTime.
Well, I think you just figured it out, sir.
All right, well, good. Explain to me the contract, because we're all talking about with Zuerlein and the situation. Everybody assuming that because of the money that Zuerlein is automatically going to be the kicker because of the contract. Are there some things that the Cowboys are able to get in and out of with this contract?
Yeah, this is pretty tricky. On the surface, it certainly looks like, first of all, Zuerlein has the credentials and he's Bones Fossils guy, even though he's coming off a bad end of the year and some injuries in L.A. So that's 3 years, $7.5 million. Wow.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys, after the signing or the agreement, then the Cowboys leaked out to multiple outlets. That was our number one guy. Of course, it's, you know, you always get your number one guy. That's the way it works in every NFL city. In this case, though, that's not really $7.5 million. It's really like $2.3 million. So let's I'm going to round it off for easier math. Let's call it $2 million guaranteed. That's
okay.
Our line. Okay. The other kicker, Ty Forbath, who didn't do anything wrong, he's got a salary of $1 million with almost nothing in a signing bonus, $137,000.
Okay.
So the trick that the Cowboys used here is the same one we've heard it. Remember Joey Bosa and his big holdout when he got drafted? And the term used was offset language.
Right.
Offset language. Well,
double dipping.
What that is, right, that is designed so Joey Bosa doesn't sign there, play like crap, they cut him a couple of years in, and he goes somewhere else and gets a bunch of money. Well, that bunch of money that he gets, if you've got offset language in your contract, is minused from what he's being paid already in this case, the Chargers. So what they've done with Zuerlein is, listen, here's your $2 million guarantee. Give or take.
Okay.
Okay. Make the team fantastic. Now you really are. Now you're a $2.5 million kicker. And the other kid's gone. Kai Forbeck's gone. And we didn't have to really pay him anything. But if Kai Forbeck beats him out, you pay Kai Forbeck his million. You say goodbye to Greg Zuerlein. And then what's going to happen, Brian, when a team needs a kicker on August 28th?
Well, you hope that they sign him. Somebody else signs him, right? Yeah,
he'll be unless his leg falls off, he'll be the most qualified kicker on the street. Some team he'll sign him. If they sign him for $2 million, the Cowboys owe him zero.
I like it.
That's the offset. If they sign him for $1.5 million, the Cowboys, again, I'm using round numbers, the Cowboys will owe him $500,000.
Okay.
So in that case, $1.5 million for Greg Zuerlein. The Cowboys would then still owe him the $500,000, and they'd be paying Forbath the million. They'd be paying the kicker position $1.5 million,
okay,
which is nothing.
Right.
So this was really, and I understand the surface questions, why do these idiots have two kickers? Surely Forbath must suck. Surely Bones is going to pick Zuerlein. Can one of them punt? Are you going to keep two? But this is the answer. It's the offset language that offsets the guarantee. It basically negates the guarantee if they dump him and he signs elsewhere.
You're hedging your bet there a little bit. I like that move a lot. That's some real creative team building. It guarantees that, you know, you'll be able to have a legit competition. You'll be able to pick the best kicker out of two good ones, and it won't hurt you too much either way you let him go.
I agree, Gavin. We were talking on the Fish Report on G-Bag Nation on Friday about, well, I wonder if the Forbath will even get a chance.
Right.
But now we realize, yes, he'll absolutely get a chance. It'll be may the best man win, as it should be, and they've created it that way. Now there's one more dollar and cents thing, Brian. You want to play with this one?
Go ahead.
So one of the local media outlets, God bless them, and they do a heck of a job, retweeted I'll paraphrase.
Morning News.
Tyrone Crawford and his contract are basically untouchable. Now,
okay,
that's not the word they use, but that's the implication of what they're saying. Do we agree?
Yes.
Okay, and these are good reporters and good people, and they're not making it up. So what are we talking about? Why would Tyrone Crawford, and I love Tyrone Crawford, he's an important part of the team. Brian, he's probably a starter in 2020. Team leader, does all the right things, all for him. He's a bully in practice, which I think they need. And then he's a sweetheart in the locker room. It's all good. But why am I promising him that I won't reduce his salary when he volunteered to have his salary be reduced? So I'm racking my brain over this over the weekend. I know we like him, but what are we doing? How do you know that he had hip surgery on both hips? I think he's fine, but are you sure? He's older now. Where did this promise come from? And then I figured it out. I figured out that it wasn't a promise from the Cowboys to Tyrone Crawford. It was a promise from somebody in the building to the media outlets so the agent would hear it. Who's the agent, Jeff Kavanaugh, for Dak Prescott?
Todd France.
Okay, and this is the biggest contract the Cowboys will ever do. have ever done, Dak Prescott. He's going to be the highest paid player in football. Guess who the agent is for Tyrone Crawford?
I would guess it's Todd France.
That would be an excellent guess. And now you see, I know they do this in the NBA, but now we're seeing this is what's being done here. And the Cowboys don't say this, and aren't going to say it, and maybe even deny it. Maybe they should. But a really educated guess is the reason that you play nicey-nice with Tyrone Crawford with the big newspaper in town is because you want to make sure Tyrone Crawford's agent, who is actually Dak Prescott's agent, understands just how nicey-nicey you are.
Well done, Fish. Anything else before we let you go?
Beer me.
There he goes. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. The great Mike Fisher here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Okay, every day at 3:40 in the spirit of baseball nuggets, we give you baseball stuff. And holy cow, how much of a bubble are they living in Houston? If you are starting to forgive the Astros for the cheating, Evan Gattis will probably make you reassess that. It's coming up next in the G-Bag Nation. All righty, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Hope you're having an outstanding day. I apologize if you're trying to get me on the webcam here, 105thefan.com/fancam, as I think I'm having some connectivity issues. You doing all right on your side, guys?
Oh, Brian and I are having a great time looking at each other. We're just wondering where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep refreshing it and trying to reset it and everything, and it's just like, sorry, you're not connected to the internet. I clearly am. This computer's working over here. Maybe I'll try it on a different computer. But it is time for baseball stuff with us here in the G-Bag Nation every day at this time in the spirit of Mike Bassick's Baseball Nuggets. And, gentlemen, I couldn't believe what I saw here from the mouth of Evan Gattis. I thought, is this an onion story? Did I get pranked by one of these, you know, websites that are, you know, not real? Well, yeah, he appeared to send a message to baseball cheating whistleblower Mike Fiers. Friday, he tweeted out an image of a glass he bought with Fiers' face on it and the word "snitches get stitches" underneath. Like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, God.
It was made by a local restaurant down there. They confirmed they'd sold out, with Evan Gattis buying the last one. Just a few very quick months have passed, and now they are so convinced they've been wronged that they are tweeting out "snitches get stitches" for Mike Fiers. I did think this would be, you know, part of the story, that fans around baseball would look at Mike Fiers as like, wow, don't be too honest around that guy, or, you know, be careful what you say around that guy. He might tell on you. I didn't think so quickly it would get to the point where members of the Houston Astros are so convinced now they've been wronged. This is an incredible story to me. And if baseball was going right now, if this was the first week, I think that beanball story would be an inferno right now. Right before coronavirus hit, those guys were getting hit like 1.5 or 2 times per game, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were lighting them up pretty good. And, you know, and the Astros had to just sit there and take it. A lot of the guys, you see them, they'd all like get hit, and then they take off their shin protector, the elbow thing, and just kind of trot down to first base because they knew it was going to happen. You had to be ready. I mean, your manager's Dusty Baker. You know, you don't think he's like going to not sit there and say, hey, guys, just get ready. You're going to get hit, okay? And how we respond to that is going to tell a lot about us.
The Astros is just another – it's just another example in a extremely long line of examples how I think most people only see the world through their own eyes, right? Where for the Astros, it's like, well, what? Like, yeah, okay, so we did some things, and we got in trouble, and we got punished. And so now we just want to play baseball again. Why are people still talking about this? And somehow you just can't fathom why people would continue to be upset about the fact that you stole something from them.
Yeah.
They just can't do it. It's just, Evan Gattis only sees through his eyes where it's like, oh my God, Fiers benefited from it while he was here. He got to win. And now he goes over there and he wants to tell on us. He's the bad guy. Not all of us for what we've done wrong. The bad guy is the guy that told people that we cheated.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
It is weird because players that leave that situation, they suddenly get real. You know, they suddenly get a different perspective. I think it does speak to how difficult it can become to have self-awareness or to really be objective and non-biased about stuff. I mean, we're kind of engineered to be, I don't know, I guess tribal is the right word for it, where we kind of look at the world like this collection of people, this is us, and that's them over there, and there's no way they can really understand what we got. It goes into, you know, weird anthropology type of stuff, but I think it's definitely in play here. And I don't even know how you begin to get there, though, where, you know, people will believe with 100% whatever they believe. Here it is. People will believe with 100% whatever they believe is necessary to belong to their group, whatever group that is. You know, and it doesn't matter how ridiculous the idea is or what mounting evidence is against that. But if I need to believe this to belong to this family group or this city's identity or this organization, I know that the moment I start believing and thinking stuff and saying things that are against that, that I will no longer be accepted inside that culture. So I think right now for people in Houston and the Astros fans, they've created that bubble where everything inside of it, if you're a real Astros fan, you believe in some way that we've been wronged, even though they are. It's fascinating to me, guys. They're the cheaters, and now they've, in a very short period of time, convinced themselves that they're the ones that have been wronged.
Yeah, I think that they, like I said, I believe the Astros, they won the championships. They did it in a way that, you know, I think if you ask people around the league, to be honest with you, and myself being in professional sports, I think there was some admiration of how they did it. And I know that's going to sound crazy, yeah. but you're always looking for that edge. You're always looking like, well, hey, why couldn't we figure that out? You know, and yeah, did some people get hurt and some people get burned by it? Absolutely. If I'm the Astros, I keep my mouth shut. I try and get through the season, you know, and hopefully you go out and you play a good brand of baseball because you got talented players and make do with that. But I do feel like, though, that if you talk to people around the league and you just got them off the side, they would say, man, that is fascinating how they did that. You know, but this is what I would have done. And the fact that they were able to use spreadsheet programs, communicate the way they do. I'm fascinated by how SMU paid its players in the 80s. And you can't get anybody to admit that, how that all
but
went.
But that's
something that they got punished for. They lost their program. But you cannot get a person to this day that was part of that over at SMU to admit how they did it. And I think that that in itself is a great story. And I would like to know from the Astros' point of view exactly how they did it. If I was at another team.
But the answer is really, really simple is the problem. Like Belichick, I'm fascinated with Belichick. The Ravens are going to send us home from the postseason. This season is over. Fortunately, I know this rule book so well that I can confuse that team to not know who to cover, and I can save this. Like Bill Belichick's got stuff in his brain that exists in rule books that can beat people by almost kind of sort of cheating. Whereas the Astros, the way that they did it was they ignored Major League Baseball saying, hey, electronic cheating stops today. The way they got around it was blatant disrespect of a direct order from Major League Baseball. So, like, teams aren't looking at that like, wow, that's a great system. Teams are looking at that like, the only thing you could admire is, holy cow, they had the nuts to tell the league to go bleep themselves when they told us all to stop.
Ernie Adams is the guy responsible for what goes on in New England. He's the guy that comes up with all the plans and things like that. He's the guy that nobody really knows about. But if you know how things work in the NFL, you know who Ernie Adams is. So to me, every team is trying to find the Ernie Adams. And I think you're right, Jeff. They definitely thumb their nose. But if I was in Arizona or one of these other teams, the Mets, whoever, I would want to know. I would like, okay, how did they come up with this? How did they do this? Were they on to something that they just got caught because somebody? Because obviously, if Friars doesn't say anything, they're home free. Am I right about that? I mean,
pretty much, yeah.
I mean, it took. And how about people that leave New England? Nobody talks about leaving New England and saying what Belichick and those guys are doing.
No, you know? Ask them about Ernie Adams, and it'll get real quiet.
Ernie Adams is covert as they come, you know. And I trust me, I've done a lot of research on Ernie Adams because I wanted to know.
There are clear rules about cheating, and that is you're not supposed to do it. Now, there is an ambiguous attitude towards cheating from the competitors and the fans, you know. And we all know many of us would have very easily just become one of the Houston Astros and cheated our balls off and won and been high-fiving. And right now, if we were on that same team, we would have been like, oh, these outsiders just don't get it. But we also know that if you're going to play that game, it's kind of like being in the mafia.
Yep.
And if that Don tells you it's time to go on a drive out into the country, you take your medicine and you go take that drive because you know what you signed up for. And if you're a cheater, yes, it is admirable.
Yeah.
But if you can't take your medicine when you get caught, then it looks pathetic and weak, Brian.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's what I'm saying. This whole thing with the Astros, if I was in their shoes right now, I would take all the bean balls. I would do, I just walk down to first base. Eventually, you're going to get mad. Eventually, you're going to get hurt. But you better keep your damn mouth shut because you chose this life. You chose it. And you're right. It's very mafia-like. It's like, hey, Tom, can you save me this one time for old time's sake? No, can't. Go in the car. You're gone. Bye. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, if you watch those old mafia movies, that's what they do. They don't. If you cross the family, you're going out into the woods. So if I'm the Astros, hey, you did what you did. You made it work. You got caught. Keep your mouth shut. Move on.
I don't know if Evan was drinking or something when he made that purchase, or he's talking about it online or something, but he is very lucky there's not baseball being played right now.
Oh, no.
So he's, I believe Evan Gattis currently, I think he's done. And so I think that's probably why he's comfortable doing this, is because Evan Gattis' career is over, and he said he's not looking for a team this year. So
that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. If I was a former teammate of Evan, I'd be like, bro, you know, you're getting the heat on us pretty good here. Can you just keep it down? You know, you don't have to be out here answering fastballs that are coming at our heads. It's easy to be a trash-talking dude over there right now. Lucius, you got the Todd Frazier cuts? We got baseball stuff here in the G-Bag Nation on 105 to the Fan. Cut two, cut three. This is Todd Frazier, one of the newest members of the Texas Rangers, and we were getting to know him out there in spring training before the coronavirus shut everything down. And a couple of things jump out about him. He's a great conversationalist, and he is the most East Coast dude on the team right now. So one of the things he was talking about is his love for pizza, although he does not actually call it pizza. Here is new Rangers third baseman or first baseman or right-handed DH Todd Frazier with Jared Sandler.
Oh, 100%, man. With the clubhouse crew, I got to shout them out. Those are my boys, man, the clubhouse guys with the Rangers. Doing tireless work. But yeah, it's about where you're from, you know. And I tell them, I say, when I order pizza, you know, if I call Al's Pizza, Luigi's, Positano's, whatever it is down here in Jersey, I say, hey, can I get a pie? And they know exactly that means one plain cheese pizza. And they're like, what do you mean? Are you talking about apple, pumpkin, or, you know, that's not. So where you guys are from and where I'm from, it's a different story. And, you know, you just got to roll with it, you know.
Hey, you know, you just got to roll with things here. Yeah, I'm doing my thing, you're doing your thing. No biggie. I just want a pie. That's a cheese pizza.
Yeah, but as much as we love food, if somebody says a pie, we know what they're talking about, don't we?
No.
No? Yeah.
On the context,
you're not
much,
really,
yeah.
Jeff? You don't?
If you have context.
Yeah. If somebody says a cherry pie or an apple pie to me, they specifically tell me what kind of pie.
Talk to them.
Key lime pie.
If I were having people over and you said, I'm going to bring over a pie.
That would be pizza to me.
No percentage of people would think that meant pizza.
Maybe that's because I lived in Philadelphia.
Maybe.
But I would specifically say, hey, Jeff, what are you cooking? Hey, I'm doing some seafood stuff. Let me bring a key lime pie then. I would specifically tell you what kind of pie I was bringing. Apple, cherry, blueberry, whatever.
Well, just a heads up, if you told me you were bringing a pie, I would know that I wasn't eating it, and I'd be pleasantly surprised because I don't like any pie. But once you showed up with pizza, I'd be like, why didn't you say you were bringing a pizza?
Pie to me is a little bit thicker, you know? It's like what they talk about, the deep dish in Chicago and stuff. Pie to me is a little bit more sauce, a little thicker. He was talking about the cheese, just the straight cheese.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's how he likes his pie or his pizza pie.
Yeah.
I'm with Jeff on this, though. I think if you said pie, I would assume dessert. Without any extra stuff.
I would specifically tell you what kind of pie I'm bringing.
But you would never say you were bringing a pie over. If you were bringing pizza, you would tell me you were bringing pizza. You would not say pie.
Well, because I know who my – you got to know your audience. And I know that I have to talk in generalities with you when it comes
to
food.
People in Texas.
I'm bringing over crawfish etouffee, Jeff, because you don't know the difference between gumbo and jambalaya and all that.
I know the difference between pizza and pie because they're very different.
You never heard of calling pizza pie?
Pizza pie, Jeff.
Yes, but no one in my life has ever said I'm going to bring a pie over and brought pizza.
You specifically?
Yes, you could say pizza pie.
Pecan pie. You specifically say what kind of pie.
Then why wouldn't you say pizza pie?
I guess it's a regional thing. I grew up with parents from New York, so they say pie sometimes.
See,
my cousin say pie. Get some pie and beer, bro. My cousin says that. Yeah.
Ryan, what's your excuse?
My excuse?
You grew up in Texas.
I grew up in Dallas, absolutely. But
you're all about Philadelphia.
I'm a worldly guy. I've been all over. I've lived on the East Coast, so I know what a pie is.
And as a worldly guy, you probably like exotic pizzas. Not just plain cheese, which confirmed that's what Todd Frazier does. Here's cut three.
So your perfect pizza is just plain cheese?
No. I'm a big pizza fan. Thin crust, of course. But I had pizza last night. That's funny that you said that. I go to this place called Positano's, and they have great cheesesteak pizza. You can put anything on a pie up here. I mean, I go to Al's Pizza, I get chicken parm on my pizza. It just I don't know what it is. Even though you can get it on a sandwich, it's just the crust is just so much better.
I don't know about that.
I got a Coney dog and chili on my pizza.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, now I'm the Coney dog.
What are we doing?
I'm not feeling that.
I got a spaghetti on my pizza.
I do like spicy meatballs on my pizza.
There you go.
It's replaced pepperoni as my favorite meat.
So, but you guys
slap a ribeye on top.
But you guys had the cheesesteak when you were in Philly, right, for the Army Navy game?
Yeah, Gino's.
And Jeff didn't get the peppers or the onions and all that put on his, right, Jeff?
I went with the guy yelled at me, but eventually I believe mine you would call American without.
Yeah, so you just went cheese, meat, and bread, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best way to eat it.
I don't know about that, boys.
Now, what would you call a Philly cheesesteak? Is that a pretzel? I mean, if pizza is pie, what's your word for a Philly cheesesteak?
Just a cheesesteak. Yeah. Oh. Pretzels are different. Salted and unsalted, yeah.
Okay. Now, what do you call a piece of toast? Is that a biscuit or a croissant? Or?
No, biscuit. Now, you can put gravy on toast if you want.
Oh, yes, you can.
Okay, yes, 2 hours. Guys. 2 hours are down. Three to go here.
I'm not
going to
last long on this show. I have a
fact. That was golden content right there. 10 things to know about the new. Well, we already did that.
Yeah.
We got to come up with something else to do. We'll talk about it next in the G-Bag Nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.